interestingly enough, when people aren't able to make these affinity group calls, they really want to hear what we discussed. So
right.
we have now decided that we are going to record all the calls and we're going to put them into the resource library, which all of you should be accessing. And I'll send you all the information if you don't already know how, but keep it in a special folder so you can always go back and look at it. And we're going to be keeping it until the next call. So you have, you know, 2 months to listen to it if you weren't able to make a call. So that's one new item that I'm talking about in 2020. Happy New Year, everyone. And the other item is that we have our conference coming up in May, May 3rd to the 5th. Are any of you attending that?
No.
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 I wish we could have an all, just a conference for specific affinity groups, but maybe in the future. But
where is it going to be?
It's going to be in Dallas.
Dallas?
I am planning to be there.
At the Fairmont Hotel. I'll make sure to, Marissa will give you information. So anyway, we're so glad you're here. Marissa's going to introduce you. I want to thank Marissa for being a fabulous chair and for really always thinking about this group and how it can be better and how it can meet your needs. And the only way that we know what your needs are is if you tell us. So please let us know what you're interested in discussing and we'll do our best to discuss it. So with that being said, Marissa, our fearless leader, take it away.
Sure. Okay, I'm just going to close my door. 1 second. Natasha, you can come in anytime if you want. It's the Zoom meeting about risk and liability. It's okay if you have time. Okay, we're always busy like crazy. Okay, so thanks for joining us in the meeting today. As Lisa mentioned, this idea came out of our last meeting. And what's interesting is that, you know, we have a group of people here from all over the country and even outside the country, even from Canada, at all different levels of caregiving, you know, and some of the reasons why, and so some of the programs represented here in the group have very extensive, broad spectrum of caregiving models. Some even include hospice. I don't know if Washington, D.C. is here with us today, but they even have a hospice. Others are still on the end of companion program or even just shopping for seniors programs and are like considering how to expand. And risk and liability comes up as a big fear and a roadblock. And one of the reasons why boards of directors shy away from considering that in their discussions of strategic planning, because they just don't know what that would look like and how that would be managed and the exposure that it would create for the agency. So I'd like to introduce Ron Reshefsky. Ron is the chairman of Century Advisory Services. And he's a JFS at Home board member and the immediate past chair of Ruth and Norman Rails Jewish Family Services. He's been involved with the agencies for years. And he is joining our call with lots of expertise. We can ask questions and bring up topics, and he can add a lot to the discussion about what type of risk and liability and exposure is involved in this field and how to manage it.
Okay, would you like me to speak?
Sure, we would love that.
Thank you, Marissa. Good afternoon, everyone. I have not prepared pre-prepared any kind of presentation because I seem to have this indelible in my head based upon all the years that I've been in the risk management space. So I will tell you that whatever business someone goes into, they have to look at the risk. And I suggest to you that all of you probably buy some sort of insurance to protect you for certain things. And I will also tell you that I think that when we first start talking about risk, insurance, I always leave out of the equation, and then we'll tell you how we, when do we start thinking about how to transfer risk either to other parties or to another risk taker, which would be an insurance company. We started our home health agency in, I guess it's been, Marissa, what now, 4 years? Close to 4 years ago?
Yes, correct.
And we deliberated, our board deliberated for quite a while for one major reason. And we knew that the economics probably would work for our organization. We knew that our community needed our services, and there was a lot of home health agency nurses registry competition in our area, but the JFS name meant a lot in the community. But our biggest concern was reputational risk. What happens to our organization's reputation if we have a big issue like a patient gets injured or a caregiver gets into a car accident, or we failed to render the right professional services and it got into the local newspapers, et cetera, and we were very concerned about protecting our reputation. So I think that Marissa will agree that when we started our JFS at home, we were very concerned about that and decided that the only way we were going to do this is if we, quote unquote, did it right. And we have now been, like I said, been into this for 4 years. And we've learned some lessons. We've experienced issues, which I'm sure most of you have experienced issues, such as home care workers getting into car accidents, generally with their vehicles. One of your patients gets injured while you're there, or perhaps while you left them unattended. Alleged theft or theft of property of a home care of a patient, damage to their property, and I guess the other one would be employee injuries. So a lot of these things we buy insurance for. And while we do buy insurance, and I think most all over the country, a lot of these types of insurance have gotten more expensive. It's becoming a little more difficult now to transfer risk at a reasonable price, or our expenses are going up in that area. And we are, so I like to look at it and say, well, what if no insurance was available? How do we look at every one of these items and assess and limit our cost of risk? Now, cost of risk is only from an insurance point of view is the cost to transfer certain risk to an insurance company. Things like reputational risk, you can't transfer to an insurance company. And economic risk, you cannot transfer to an insurance company. So there are elements of risk that we assume every day by opening our door. And also, as we become more familiar with what our risks are and the types of losses that we are incurring, we become much more aware of what's out there. And I would like to kind of open it up a little bit, and maybe Marissa could talk about a few of the things that we've started to come across over the last 4 years, and certainly has heightened our awareness of things that we need to do. And I'll come back about the insurance aspects of this even more after Marissa talks about some of the things that we've experienced.
Okay, thank you. So what comes to the top of my head, you know, when you first get over that hurdle and the decision is made that you're going to open, all of those fears, you push them to the back of your mind because you need to go into full swing and work. And you want to be successful. And your first task is to hire people and match them with your clients and generate revenue. So once you get into that mode, you're working really hard and trying to get these cases staffed. And it all takes on a life of its own. And then you only learn through experience. We had, of course, policies and procedures in place that were established based on what was considered to be best practices from consulting with other people experienced in the field. And then it's always a project to implement those policies and procedures. So for example, when it comes to taking the risk of allowing caregivers to drive. I know that we, for example, have spoken about that in this group, and we have, again, a range from people that say, well, we don't allow that at all, because that's just not something we want to manage. We can't even picture what that would be like, to people like us that say we wouldn't even have a program or an agency without doing that, because that's the primary need in the community. So really what this makes me think about is it starts with your mission and your vision. If we're here to serve the community and we put that as the priority, then we have, and we're committed to that and we take it seriously, we have to find a way to meet the needs of the community, of course, while managing that risk. So for us, we have policies and procedures for how to do motor vehicle record screenings. And we have strict rules about what we look for on a motor vehicle record history that would eliminate them, the applicant, from eligibility for hire. For example, to be specific, if they had an at-fault accident within the last 3 years or more than 2 moving violations within the last 3 years, we do not hire them. And it goes without saying, of course, driving under the influence and things like that, obviously, no. So that's something that, of course, gives peace of mind to the families and clients calling for service, asking us about what kind of things we do to ensure their loved one's safety, and it manages our risk at the same time. None of these things are guarantees. Accidents happen. But it's just a safeguard you can put in place. It does help us sleep a little better, because this kind of industry, working in it, does create anxiety for the people who are responsible. So knowing that we have these kinds of rules, it manages our stress. You know, you need to have stringent policies to manage the stress so that you feel a sense of control. You know, we can have standards about the CEUs and education of the caregivers. Some people have more ability to have in-service trainings. Again, it manages your stress and your anxiety if you know that you've sat face-to-face with the caregivers, provided them with trainings on things that are risky, like managing patients that are frail and fall risks. We have learned the hard way to be choosy about who we accept as clients and to even terminate clients when they become too risky. And so that is kind of the continuum of what I said when
like
we first,
what?
You, what?
Like what? What
like, so when you first open, like I said, you're just wanting to get that revenue flow and you're so excited when a client calls. Yes, yes, yes. You just want the client. Now that we're in a few years into this, we have the luxury to think about it first and say, wait a minute, what are the red flags here?
Right.
An unreasonable child calling with expectations that we know we'll never satisfy, family dynamics that seem so in upheaval that will really interfere with the ability for us to create a care plan that can be implemented without so much conflict. A fall risk, right? When they say, well, my mom's a fall risk, but they are hypersensitive to like insisting that it's 24/7 constant eyes on the client, you start to question their safety at home. Our goal, you know, it's in our mission to age safely at home with dignity, but it still has to make sense. Okay. So if the caregiver, if we're anxious that, oh my God, but what if the caregiver walks away to go make a sandwich? And if the client also has, you know, behaviors where they're not so compliant, right? Clients want to be independent. We implement care plans. The client wants to do it themselves. So we have to be very careful what clients we decide that we're going to service, and sometimes make a hard decision that they're out of the scope of what we can safely provide services.
But Marissa, sometimes you find that out after you've taken the client on and have provided service a number of times.
Yes, and we've done this very difficult thing, which where we have actually terminated services on active clients. And it's been hard. We didn't do it at first, but we learned the hard way. And we also learned the hard way with clients. You know, you learn a lot of us, I'm not a social worker or a psychologist. A manager, you know, I have a business administration, okay, background, but, and policy background, but those of you on the call who have social work, clinical social work, I mean, you know that you can sometimes judge what's going on with a person based on how they make you feel. And when you are going above and beyond for a client, at first you think, oh, I'm so great, I go above and beyond. When you realize that you're constantly bending the rules or going above and beyond what you would typically do for a son or a daughter, it's a really big red flag. And we've learned the hard way, because we have, those people who we have just done everything for have turned out to be the ones that are the most litigious.
Right.
And it's been a difficult lesson to learn, but we learned it.
So what do other people think about what Marissa's talking about, what Ron said, and their own agencies? And are people taking risks? Do people feel like they...
I think I agree totally with what was said by Marissa, and I think a lot is about policies and orientation, but I would add also continuing supervision. And for instance, you know, we go in with maybe a worker that has a lot of years of experience, and then we realize that this person is wearing flip-flop at work. So I think it's, even so they know that they should wear closed shoes. I mean, we have to go in and reset sometimes and repeat things. So we provide also some regular training, you know, supervision, and also regular communication with the whole team, reminding them. I know nowadays it's really, don't laugh, we don't have much snow in Vancouver usually, but we have to give them guidance. And I think this is also, I would say, security regarding liability, because at least we provide the information and we do our best to check on the behavior of the home support workers.
People aren't as litigious in Canada as they are in the States. So it's not as much of an issue. I know. Yeah. Plus, we have like separate car insurance managed by, I think it's provincially. So it's a bit of a different ball game, but we definitely do. Our risks have come under the category of theft, accusations of theft.
Right.
We had one case where, unfortunately, the home support worker was taking money out of the client's bank account. I mean, that was the only case in all the years, 11 years I've been here, but that was not good. And they did take legal action in that situation. So we just had to kind of tighten up our supervision and our policies around shopping and credit cards and debit cards.
Right.
How
many other people have had a problem with theft?
Ron, you cut out for a second. What did you say again?
How many other people have had a problem with theft of patients' property or money? Anyone else?
Yeah,
accusations thereof, yeah.
We've had accusations, but never proven anything, because fortunately or unfortunately, we're not always the only people in that person's home or apartment. Right.
It's very hard to prove.
Yeah.
Correct.
I think if I could weigh in very quickly, we find constantly having almost at every home health aid meeting once a month, having to go over boundaries and explaining risk management to people who are part of a wonderful, wonderful team who can't do enough for their clients, but put themselves and the agency and the federation at risk being so above and beyond. So that's one of our problems. And we too have, you know, policies and procedures regarding vehicles. We have, I check them physically once or twice a year. You know, we have a whole procedure for making sure their insurance is up to date, their stickers up to date, the whole nine yards. But I think the biggest problem we have is making sure when somebody thinks they're doing a good thing that they run it through me first.
Yes.
Because they do not understand, and it's my job to understand risk management and to keep them safe, and to keep the agency and the federation safe from accusations.
Do you worry about it all the time?
I don't worry about it. I have a meeting about it every month. Every month it's something about boundaries. And usually it is not, it has to be explained to them as well that when you go above and beyond, you are setting up the next person that comes behind you as well. There are certain things we do and certain things we don't do. And if somebody is going to be working with that client afterwards, they might not necessarily do everything that you do for them. And there's expectations that are sometimes not met, and there are disappointments. But my main problem is people who are asked by, we have housing, we have Federation housing. Some of the coordinators in Federation housing will ask our staff to do things for clients while they're in the building, and that sets both client and staff up for a problem. So right now I have a communication problem. I need to know, have all that go through me so I can say, sure, that's a great idea, or probably not. If you're entering an empty apartment to take care of somebody's cat because you're doing a favor for somebody that's in the hospital, you don't realize that if something's missing or you fall and you get hurt and I don't know you're in there, that's a big risk management problem. Yeah. For me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's where we're at with all of that. Again, I agree with everybody. It's policies and procedures, but implementing them and checking up on them and reminding them that it's much a much bigger picture than just what they are involved in is a challenge, I think.
So it's a full-time job in and of itself.
Yeah, and the communication and the reminders is key, Linda. You're 100% right. We try and don't have enough contact with our caregivers in person. Sending out, you know, messages and texts and emails are only so effective. And it's definitely a challenge because there's the policies and procedures, and then there's what's really happening.
Mm-hmm.
And you can only do something about something you know about. And most of the time, when you find out about something, it's after that.
It's afterwards, right. Right.
And now you're realizing something that you never knew and having to warn everybody, in case you ever did this, we want you to know you shouldn't have it, please don't do it. Then you find out that it's been happening.
Usually it's through the goodness of their hearts.
It is, 100%. And right. having nothing to do really with risk and liability, actually having to do with caregiver satisfaction, because we started out as a companion service and we were very intimate and close with our companions because they were younger seniors in our community. And they would go above and beyond. And eventually we learned and kept saying, going above and beyond is just a recipe to be disappointed. Because they would end up so involved with the client that when the client turned on them in any way, they would be heartbroken. Or when they were demanding or disappointed, the client was disappointed because they couldn't come that one extra time to just change the light bulb. And the client got angry. Going above and beyond is a terrible idea. Just do your job.
Okay, so Marissa, hold on. What does Debbie think? I think you've been trying to talk. You came back. You came on. Like, what are you thinking about this conversation? Is that true? You have something to add to it?
No, I think I said, you know, it's a full-time job just managing these issues for our staff. It's if you don't have a full-on HR or somebody whose job it is just to come with your caregivers, you could spend all day management between your clients and your caregivers. I mean, teaching them about, I feel like we're always teaching adulting for a lot of our younger caregivers, how to communicate, how to not have their face in their phone, you know. So forget risk management. You have to teach them how to be adults half the time. So it's challenging. The car issue is very challenging. You know, I agree with you, especially when you have someone like you said, Federation. There are a lot of people that come in and out of apartments. What's our due diligence to research what our employee did? Do we support them? Do we, you know, it's a very challenging. And I agree about the going above and beyond never leads to anything good.
Never
and
that's anything good.
Unfortunate, that's an unfortunate piece of our work.
Right. For the purpose of this call, I think the question is it worth it?
Right.
Is it worth it? The liability and the exposure that we take, is it worth it? I think yes, because we have these needs in the community and we are committed to meeting them and the community wants us to meet them. Our community wants us to be the provider. They come to us because they want us to be a provider. When an agency gets a call for services that they don't provide, that's the signal that you need to look into providing that service. The community wanted us to provide this service. It was the natural continuum of a service we were already providing, but it did carry more risk. We're being responsive to the needs of the community, and I think that's very important. I do believe it's manageable, but that's a question I kind of wanted to open up and would be really beneficial for Ron being with us today, for anybody who's afraid to, or for anyone who's working with a board that's afraid to take it to the next level and is unable to meet the mission, you know, the needs of the community because of that fear. You have an opportunity to ask those questions today, because that's really what this is all about. We want to meet the needs of the community, but what if it's too risky? Is it worth it for you?
And it's an association, we want to meet your needs.
So is anyone in that position right now in your agency to potentially take it the next step? And is your board saying no because of the risk? I mean, that's the question that we should ask the people on this call. Israela's going to say something, I think. You have to unmute yourself. Do you know how to do that? Top right.
I got it. Okay. So here at Stanford, Shoki JFS, we're a little different. Our aides don't work for JFS. We're a registry. So the aides themselves take on a great deal of responsibility. I could say that in some ways it worked to our benefit, quite frankly. There was a major issue where an aide had brought a senior to a rehab facility. And the aide said, okay, here is the senior, you do your thing, I am going to go over here for a cup of coffee. While the senior was in the care of the rehab facility, which actually is associated with our local hospital, the senior had to go to the ladies' room. And so the therapist brought her to the bathroom, gave her her privacy, but while she was in the bathroom, unfortunately, trying to pull up her own pants, she fell, hit her head, and she actually subsequently died.
Connie.
And what happened was the family was suing Stanford, the hospital and the rehab facility. And the aide in this case didn't have insurance. They were bringing her in as a, let's say, co-defendant. And because she was an extension of JFS, they were bringing us in as a liability. The fortunate thing in this regard was that we were able to prove that she didn't work for us. So the liability certainly didn't extend to us, and the aide didn't certainly have any resources or money to go after. And it was completely, the aide had nothing to do with it, was completely in the care of the rehab facility. And so the lawsuit had to remain with that. But this is how we get drawn in, even though the aides don't work for us. But as a result, what we did do to help protect aides who may have some type of resources, and this is for you ladies and agencies out there, even when the aides don't work for us and we do not extend any of our liability to them, we were able to find liability insurance for an individual as opposed to a group. I could give you the information. It's from an agency in Manhattan. And basically, you get different CNAs, caregivers, home health aides, nurses, independent insurance that is basically $70 a year for $1 million. And that is the best deal out there that we were able to find. And we actually encourage our aides to have this insurance. Now, if this aide had the insurance, unfortunately, it would have extended to her, and they would have, the hospital certainly would have insisted on suing the aide. In some ways, it was better that she didn't have the insurance, at least for herself, because then she wouldn't have had this knock, I got no money, good luck, and they just went right for the hospital. But we still, this is, no one's ever, as far as I'm aware, though, needed and have made a claim, but those aides who are smart, you know, certainly
so on top of what
they have some type of coverage.
So, Israel, is that on top of what the agencies provide for them? Because some agencies, I'm sure.
We provide absolutely nothing.
They're a registry, so the caregiver is not covered under
them. Provide, Marissa or Elaine, you know, Linda, so, you provide insurance.
So our caregivers, most of our caregivers are also registered to work with all different entities. So a caregiver who works for our agency may also be a caregiver in a nurse registry.
Right.
State to state, rules and regulations vary. In the state of Florida, from what I know, the nurse registries, the Agency for Healthcare Administration policy requires that a nurse registry check the credentials of the caregiver, even though we're not responsible for them, we're responsible to make sure that they are eligible to provide the service that they're providing. That's one thing. So like if they say they're a CNA, we're responsible to have a copy of that license and know that it's active.
Yeah.
Okay, but we have always required, like before we were a home health agency and we only provide companion services, we required those companions to purchase that insurance. And the nurse registries all throughout South Florida require independent contracting caregivers to purchase that insurance. Require it, not optional at all.
Well, it's a good idea. Maybe you can send it to me, Israel, and I can put it in the resource library.
Sure, absolutely. But also just driving. Our aides do drive. They take it upon themselves. Whenever they drive somebody, it is a liability, but that's one of the things that actually people end up using us, because the aides want the job, they'll drive them. And when the other agencies, obviously, for obvious reasons, I should say, don't let their aides drive. So it's something that people actually come to us for, is the driving.
Mm-hmm. It's your the insurance you require them. We require 100, 300, 50 mandatory, and I need to see their declaration page. Are you checking how much insurance they have?
No. I just want to make sure that they have insurance. We do ask for a copy of, obviously, their registration for the car and their insurance, but we don't see how much insurance that they have, no.
Yeah, one of our issues here in Florida is, and it's probably a bigger issue certainly here, but it's also a big issue in many metropolitan areas. Automobile insurance is very expensive.
Yeah.
And a lot of the home health workers, particularly in Florida, sometimes will, if you aren't not on top of them, they won't buy insurance. And on top of that, we have difficulty requiring high limits because they can't afford it. And so we have to work our policy in such a way that to help us and to help the healthcare worker. We had Marissa will tell you, we had an accident about a year and a half ago where One of our caregivers was driving one of our clients, had a car accident, and the litigation is still going on and on between their insurance company and our driver, and our patient actually subsequently has passed away. So it's but the case is still going on, and we're still incurring litigation expenses, et cetera. So it's I think it's important it is to do all we can do to prevent accidents. It's as important that when something happens that we identify and report the issues to people that are, can react quickly and limit our exposure and try to limit you know, what is ultimately going to get paid out. So that's kind of a hint for all of you.
Ron, what I would say is that in New Jersey, probably the insurance is much more expensive. I don't know that for a fact than in Florida. We have a small team, but those limits are mandatory, and our people make anywhere from $12 to $15 an hour, and they do it, and we insist upon it, which reduces the risk for the Federation. That's just right. My opinion and what we do.
Linda, do you have, I seem to remember you describing your program. Was it more of a companion program?
Not well, I have, at the moment, we have companion drivers and home health aides, and we're going to morph into more of everybody has to be a CHHA at some point. And we're trying to, unfortunately, I found an online program that they can do a couple days of skill set that's really reasonable. So we're trying to get everybody on board in becoming a CHHA. They'll make more money too, you know.
But what's the age range of your companion?
My people are 55 to 75. Right. So I don't have the let's be on your phone kind of thing. You know, I'm lucky. It's a really great team. Most of these ladies have taken care of parents, you know.
Right. So when we had a companion only program, and again, it was younger seniors, like 55 to 75. We had our requirement at 100, 300. Mm-hmm. And at Jewish Family Services, they have a program called Kibitz and Ride, which is volunteer drivers. And the volunteers, of course, tend to be that age range mm-hmm. in the community. And they also have those higher limits as a requirement. And the reason is because it's possible. It's possible. But they can afford it. They can afford it, so it's easy to require it. We would not be operating. We would have, there is such a caregiver shortage in South Florida. If we required 100, 300, we wouldn't have a home care agency.
We have they're very, very difficult to find. Companions, not so much, but CHHA.
Right. That's what I'm talking about, AIDS, right.
Yeah, you're right about the demographic, about the age range, but I'll say that, you know, I think it reduces your risk. That's just my opinion.
I wish we could. Yeah. I wish a lot of things, but we compromise a lot. We wish that we could.
What about Shawnee or Laura or Trisha or Tatiana? Do you, or Tammy? You haven't. I know you tried to talk for a moment there, Tammy. Do you have anything to add to this? Yeah.
Absolutely. In Florida versus a lot of the other states, our workers work for a lot less money. Our Medicaid reimbursement down here is super, super, super low. Like, most of my staff is starting at $10 an hour. And to ask them to pay for $250 a month in insurance and beat their cars up, basically, is what they're doing. My folks do transport as well. It's just not feasible to be able to live here with the rent the way that it's gone. You definitely can't live on a single income down here anymore. You have to have two working parents in the household to survive. But to ask for the 100, 300, it's here. It's just, I don't know. It's just not feasible. They wouldn't basically not even be working to put food on the table for their families.
See, as opposed to New Jersey, in Florida, liability insurance is not mandatory. So it becomes as expensive to insure yourself against an uninsured driver as it is for your own liability insurance. So it's a very difficult situation in the environment that we are in Florida.
We're finding also fewer and fewer of our aides even own cars and rely on Uber and Lyft because they can these days. So we have people, they might say they own a car, but then they get to the visit or you schedule them a visit to drive and they go, oh no, I don't have a car, I Uber everywhere.
Oh my gosh. There's actually now a site called GoGo Grandparent. It basically runs the same principle as Uber and Lyft, but it's called GoGo Grandparent here.
Yeah, we have that in Cincinnati too. It was not successful, unfortunately.
Yeah, what's going on
here? I don't mind taking a client in an Uber, but we have to approve that too, and that adds a whole another level of liability.
So I feel Tatiana has not been able to talk because her mic isn't working. Meanwhile, she's been talking the whole time on the chat. I haven't even looked. I'm so sorry. But I just want to say what she said. She said, for working outside of the scheduled hours, clients and worker often try to reschedule on their own, avoiding informing the office, the problem of not being insured outside of the hours. We hope that the clock-in system with an app, so she's got a clock-in system with an app would help. Oh, Linda's been following. Good point, Tatiana. Tatiana says registries also known as contractors. And then she gave us some invoicing something. I'm not even sure what that is. But she operates on Alberta Home Care's requirements when we work for their clients. And then Shawnee, I don't know if you can speak or not, but they have a registry as well, like Israela's. And we encourage our aides to have that insurance as well. It's a yearly insurance because it's a registry. They are independent. It's not required. We can only encourage. However, we do require that you provide car insurance, right? Like you said, if you're going to be a car driver. Tatiana says, hello, we oblige caregivers to get a business insurance.
Yes.
But it's covered by us through claims conference.
That's interesting.
And Shawnee says, our caregivers get paid 17 to 20. That's a lot more than 10, which is feasible. We have volunteer Uber drivers and we have GoGo Grandparents, right, which is successful. Her mic isn't working either. I don't know why anyone's mic isn't working. Anyway. And Tricia, you haven't said anything. I don't know if you have anything to, and your mic isn't working. You have to unmute yourself or maybe go down to the bottom where there's a microphone, that upside down V. Make sure your mic is connected and make sure your volume's up. A lot of times people's volumes aren't up in their computers. I don't know.
Wow.
Want to try it again? Tricia? And Shawnee wants to know, what is the business insurance? So someone can write us back.
Well, I can tell you about that because Tatiana's from Canada. So in British Columbia, the car insurance, I don't know about for Tatiana, but certainly in British Columbia, the car insurance is, there's a monopoly basically.
Provincial.
Right? And it's provincially run. So you can have like a personal work insurance, and then you can have a business insurance. So we don't let home support workers drive clients in their cars. We would only let them do that if they had a business insurance. So in that case, the difference between their personal work insurance and the business insurance would be absorbed by the client, not by the agency.
Elaine, maybe you and Tricia can talk offline about that if Tricia's interested, because that sounds like it may be something that she would want to take advantage of, and you could tell her where to go, right?
Sure.
Yeah. It's interesting because things evolve just according to the realities of where you are.
Right.
You know, yes. It just is what it is. You're not going to allow that. Therefore it shifts to the client.
Uh-huh.
And it becomes the reality. If they want somebody who drives, this is the cost they have to incur. It's just reality.
Exactly.
Whereas to us, like, totally not what's happening. And it just depends where you live and what the reality is.
Exactly.
So, So Tricia, Elaine is going to talk with you offline about whatever that business insurance is, and maybe can tell you how to get it because you somehow came off the computer.
Is Tricia from the state?
I'm here. Do you hear me now?
Now yeah. We do, yes.
Okay, so anybody who's unmuted, it's a setting in your actual phones that you have to allow the app to unmute you. You have to go into your settings of your actual phone.
Oh, if you're on a phone.
Yes.
A lot of people are on computers, right?
Okay, sorry. But that, no, so that my model sense. Is very different. We don't allow any driving in our program. We're based out in Montreal, Quebec. We're also funded through the Material Claims Program, providing services to Holocaust survivors who are currently living in their own home environments. And if our clients, which is a need for them to go grocery shopping or medical appointments or out in the community to run their errands, they have to do taxi, bus, or adapt to transport.
Right. But claims pays for it.
No, the worker is responsible to pay the... If the worker has a bus pass or their own bus pass, they're allowed on the transport adapt day, but the client, it's $2 for them to have support on the transport adapt day, or the client themselves have to pay for the taxi. It is not covered through claims.
Okay. Wow.
So my question is then, Tricia.
Yep.
Okay, so it wouldn't be an option for us only because we have a terrible or non-existent, I should say, public transportation system. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you have that option and it seems to be it's working.
Yeah.
And so is that why you don't need to really reconsider or have that exposure? It's working.
So I think to our favor, we could sort of back up to the fact that we aren't insured in for you to be driving your clients anywhere. We could sort of use that material claims policy to benefit and support us. I think if we had more of a private client base or clients who are paying for the service, I think it would have to be revisited, to be honest with you.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it is a concern. It is a concern, I think. And I know somebody also brought up theft. We have had accusations. There was one worker where we did have to terminate because she admitted to taking some of the client's canned foods.
She admitted it.
Because we had backup. The client had a video in their home. Mm-hmm. A lot of our clients have videos. I don't know if a lot of you are facing that right now, but several of our clients have video cameras in the homes of their family members.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. So you're saying that you're the grant contract from the claims conference for you does not allow for the caregivers to drive clients, because for us through JFS, we do, and they pay mileage.
No, to be honest with you, I use it to my benefit. Mm-hmm. I think if we, you know, I sort of just tell them it's part of the program. That. Yeah. Yeah. It's terrible, but I will say 90% of our workers do not have a car.
So it doesn't matter right now anyway.
It's not really a need, and I think it's so educated with our clients right now. The odd workers that do have a car, we do face some issues, but we say, listen, we're not allowed, and we speak to the client, and we explain them, you know, the policies, and they're not insured. So it's putting the client and the worker at risk.
Right. So everyone's, Laura, who hasn't been able to speak, listen to this, everyone's going to be so jealous. Lastly, in Cleveland, they have a grant-funded bus that takes clients and their caregivers to appointments with the licensed agency driver. The transportation runs Monday through Friday, oh my goodness, on a first-come, first-served basis within specific geographic radius. That's pretty interesting.
That's similar to our adapted transport program here, and it's a 7-day.
You have to pay $2 to get on or whatever it is, you know, to get help. It sounds like this.
Can you share that information about Cleveland?
Who, Laura? That's
something we've toyed with. Is it worth it to hire a car and a driver and just somebody, you know, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5?
A van. Maybe a little van, you mean.
Right. Who can take, you know, a client and an aide to a doctor's appointment.
What would you like Laura to share with you? Because she
what it takes her to run it, how it works, whatever information she's willing to share.
So Laura, you heard that, I imagine. and maybe you and Debbie can get together. Are the people interested in that too? Potentially, you can just nod or not.
Is that run by her agency, or is that a Cleveland thing?
What'd you say? I'm sorry, Marissa.
Is that run by the city or by her agency?
I think it's run by the agency. And I'm going to email you, Debbie, to let you know what her email is. But you can probably find it in the whole list of emails that I send to you all. It's Laura Dales, L. Dales. I'll send it to you. Okay. What's your last name, Debbie?
Balk, B-A-L-K.
So anyway, this was very interesting. Does anyone else have something to say? I feel like we haven't come up with any solutions to the risk, but it's there and you all know it, and it takes a lot to run agencies when there's all this risk, but we do it because we love it. That's what Marissa was saying in the beginning. Ron, do you have any, thoughts about that? Like, you can't cover everything, but I guess you can try to protect yourself.
Can't cover everything, and wherever you can, you want to protect yourself from having an insurance claim. The market for purchasing, particularly liability insurance, in the last 12 months has become much more restrictive in the U.S. Because of the experience that insurance companies are having with their claims. So my sense is that the cost of transferring risk is going to become more expensive, and the necessity to take on more risk is going to be growing.
Wow. That's good for your business.
Yeah.
But, it's expensive, right? It's really expensive to...
Very expensive, and I'm not here to sell insurance, but if anybody needs any help or advice, I'm happy to be here to give you any advice or answer any questions.
Well, thank you so much.
I have a question. It's not to do with insurance, but what do you do when a client owes money to the program and isn't paying?
That's the next session.
That's a great one. We can do that. We have a lot to say about that.
That's a risk.
It is. But we have, I would love to have a session on financial stuff if anybody else is interested.
Yes, definitely.
Is that a definitely? What do you think, Tammy, Debbie, anyone? Shawnee, you can write in, Laura, Tatiana. We want everyone to be happy with the topics that we choose. So does that sound good?
Yeah, I just had to send a certified letter to somebody yesterday. So I
send us a copy of it. We'll put it in the resource file. So, yeah.
It can be a broad topic. It can be broader than just that, because sometimes there's billing errors, there's payment, there are errors that we make and we have to correct and tell someone they owe money and it was our fault. There's all kinds of things.
Terrific. Yeah. So we'll talk about it.
It would be helpful also, even though we're all different cities, it's always helpful to have another price comparison. If we're going to talk financials, let's talk about what we're charging, what the market is bearing in each of our cities. That would be super helpful also. Terrific. We all always need that research.
So we will do that. The next meeting is on March 19th, same time, same bat time, same bat channel.
Lisa, but how awesome is that? We got our next topic.
It's great. But I want to encourage, and I really want you all to think about whatever you have, whatever kinds of forms or information. Ron, please give us a page of what your company is. We want to put it in our resource file under risk and liability so that you can look at it in the future. What was that? Whatever you think you use and other people could benefit from, because we want our resource file to benefit you so we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time. So it's yours and you have all the information. So we want to encourage you to send it to me and we'll upload it and I will tell you how to do it. Put it in a special file so you know how to do it every time. It's very easy. But
we started this way, and it was an informal conversation before everybody got on. Are there home care working groups happening at the conference in May? Is that a breakout group? Is that something? I'm trying to decide how to budget my conference money for the year, that kind of thing.
Okay, so tomorrow Debbie, we are sending out the schedule of the conference and all of the sessions with descriptions. So look and see if there are, you know, breakout group sessions that would be of interest to you. I mean, I think we have something that BOCA is doing with two other agencies about how to generate income for senior services, but that's not you guys. I'm not sure if there is something specific for home care agencies, if you want to know the truth.
But, you know, in the future, because we kind of touched on it a couple of sessions ago, and, you know, obviously, so it's too late for this year, but hopefully we'll continue to have a strong group for the, and then next year we can plan ahead. If we submit proposals and if we drum up interest, we can definitely create a track. Right. And then we would have an affinity group lunch and we could meet each other in person. It's all up to us.
Right. So true. There's a lot of sessions, or there's sessions for older adults, not specific only to home care. Right. So, but look at it tomorrow and listen to what Marissa said, because that is true. And I thought this was a very lively discussion, and I look forward to seeing everyone next time. Right. Anything else, anyone?
Thank you.
Are you there, Marissa? Anything else?
I'm here now. Thank you.
And next time, maybe
you'll come up.
Okay, you guys.
There are some people that have been with us usually that weren't here today. So I'm going to try to reach out to them and see if they have time to listen to the recording and maybe contribute off, you know, after the fact.
Fabulous. Okay. Goodbye, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.